What is the object of an objective epistemology? Origin, evolution, and survival strategies. This body and mind problem has fascinated you as much as any other scientists. However, before I go into your work upon the subject matter, I want to sketch the circumstances in which your approach has merged. That is, I want to sketch the cultural ideas that led to your evolutionist approach of the mind and the self, by sketching the disappearance of origin. One of the most dominating preoccupations in Western science is its view of time, most definitely its preoccupation with causality and evolution. Origin has played a dubious role in this process. It has been the site of a continuous battle for at least 500 years, and for some time the principle of evolutionism seemed to have won. It has played a dominant role within the rise of anthropology, according to Johannes Fabian, as it was applied on the level of societies different from the West, which were, much from tradition of the social Darwinism, labeled as primitive. The discussion still continues on the matter, but its persistence in cultural anthropology should be seen against the background of colonialism and post-colonialism. Here, it is not relevant to go into the discussion. I want to focus on the rise of evolutionism within Western sciences, the natural sciences as well as the social ones. It is possible to detect a number of streams of thoughts which have enabled principles of causality and evolutionism to dominate science. I would like to call them quests, in accordance with the title of your autobiography, The Unended Quest. My focus is, and will be, on the quests that seem to have ended. But, as I will argue, these quests did not end because of the principle of falsification that you feel to be the only true method in science. You have expressed this principle quite potently as a search for scientific truths, namely, in matters of the intellect, the only things worth striving for are true theories, or theories which come near to the truth, at any rate nearer than some other competing theory, for example, an older one. In your work, I frequently notice that you consider this view of science as something new and also something better than, for instance, pre-Socratic debates. This partly is the result of the fact that you consider the meaning of words as unimportant and that the fundamentals of science lay in their constant testing by the reality of scientific experiments. However, I do very much agree with the critique which your own student, Thomas Kuhn, developed when he noticed that, first of all, in scientific tests it is not the current theory but the individual scientist which is tested, and furthermore, that it is precisely the abandonment of critical discourse that marks the tradition of science. What then marks the problem of your experimental method is its unended quest. And that is not new. You look upon falsification as a method to create what you call epistemological objectivism, a type of knowledge that exceeds all other types because of its objective argumentative capacity. Evolutionary like it is placed on top of the ladder of sophistication. It implies to be higher knowledge than religious idea, than artistic ideas, than political ideas, than feelings and emotions. And, according to your own words, your notion of science is responsible for the death of the logical positivism, with its methods of induction and its methods of verification. I would like to remind you that the quest for what is real and what is unreal, which later transformed into the quest of what is objective and subjective, has been part and parcel of the Western world since the time of ancient Gnosticism. The philosopher of ancient Gnosticism generated an image of individual human beings for which the highest good consisted of an objective mind controlling the blind impulses of a subjective body. Also, Hustler did extensive work in the field. It has developed synchronically with the idea that deconstructing the subjectivity of bodily experiences could create an instrument for clearer, less blurred outlook on reality. And you too subscribe to the senses as a matter of induction. And the quest for objectivity, at least in your view, seems to be more a matter of disciplining subjectivity of the senses through falsification, which is quite a traditional view. It seems to me that within any kind of epistemology, which I would rather call one historical narrative among many others, it takes at least an honest view of the social implication of fundamentals. We are not modest agents of the objective world unless we do not want to take responsibility for our own action. I pose that the direction of the natural science, in spite of its objective merits, is not an objective one. It is not a coincidence that this methodological movement has developed simultaneously with the establishment of an external world, which is needed desperately as a justification for objectivity. The split between this world and what later became the internal world, which you call sneeringly panpsychism, has very little to do with the successes of the natural sciences. Rather, the split itself constructed the internal world as a psychoanalytical obscurity and the external world as a successful means of dominance. In order to explain this, I will give a rather dramatic example here which underlines Kuhn's remarks. I will call your attention to the case of Goethe versus Darwin, the economy of forms, or the nature of imperialism.